From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. You might say Scientology is the natural religion to emerge in post-World War II America. It's got faith and rationalism, self-discovery and science fiction, super ambition and strangeness, the big buildings and bank accounts, the billion-year contracts, the charges of totalitarianism and abuse, a handful of Hollywood celebrities who serve as its royal privileged ambassadors, and lots of secrets. This hour, On Point, a big new look at the Church of Scientology. You can join the conversation. Is it a cult? A legitimate faith entitled to its quirky credo? Are you, were you a Scientologist? Do you know this universe? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from New York is Lawrence Wright, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, staff writer for The New Yorker. His big new book is Going Clear, Scientology, Hollywood, and the Prison of Belief. It's on the New York Times top 10 bestsellers list. There's an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Lawrence Wright, welcome back to On Point. Thanks very much for being here.
It's good to talk to you again, Tom.
It's good to get around to you. You've been out there talking about this for a while, and I'm sorry it took us so long. You've done a lot of research. Now you've rolled it out to the public at a time when people are thinking and talking about this. They ran big ads, the Church of Scientology did, during the Super Bowl in some cities. We'll listen to some of that. What has struck you, Lawrence Wright, about the reaction of people to your exposition of the Church of Scientology? What kind of reaction are you getting?
Well, from the church, it's very hostile. But I think people are extremely interested in Scientology because I love the way you summed up all its qualities at the top. It has a lot of intriguing elements, and it is just, you know, people really are very hungry to know what's going on inside the church and why people are drawn to it. What do they get out of it?
Hungry because it's shocking. You do have shocking revelations in here. Hungry because it's alluring.
Yes, you know, both of those things. I think let's talk about the alluring qualities of it. You know, you do have the celebrity pitchmen that make it intriguing to a lot of Americans or a lot of people around the world. And Scientology does offer a menu of things for the problems that ail you. If you go into a Scientology church, they'll ask, what is your ruin? What is standing in the way of your economic or mental or spiritual progress in life? And they'll say that, you know, we can help you with that. And oftentimes they can. They can offer you communications courses or courses on relationships, self-confidence, those kinds of things. And people do feel that they've been helped by it. On the other hand, inside Scientology, there has grown up a kind of totalistic universe. It's especially manifest inside its clergy, which is known as the Sea Org. And it's within that organization that we have all these allegations of abuse and involuntary confinement.
I want to look at that, but let's just start with the title of your book, Lawrence, Going Clear. That's a very important term in Scientology. What does it mean?
Going clear is like the base camp in Scientology. It comes originally from Dianetics, which was this book that L. Ron Hubbard, the founder of Scientology, published in 1950, in that he propose that you have two minds inside you. One is your analytical or rational mind. It makes all the correct decisions. It's a perfect computer. It remembers everything and is a flawless machine. And then there is your reactive mind, which is full of the fears and neuroses and aberrant behavior that are caused by experiences that happened to you in this life or previous lives. And the goal of becoming clear is to dredge up all those old memories, expunge them of the kind of power they have over your behavior. And when you've done that, you have eliminated your reactive mind, and at that point you're clear. and you have extraordinary powers. Your intelligence is much higher. Your reaction time, even your eyesight is improved, and you're invulnerable to diseases. You've achieved a kind of superhuman status, which is still only the base camp for the upper levels of Scientology.
We'll talk about what's at the upper levels. That kind of early digging through all of your stuff. Sounds a lot like talk therapy, and yet the Church of Scientology is very famously hostile to psychiatry, psychology. Why?
It goes back to that book, Dianetics, that L. Ron Hubbard wrote in the space of, it was a 400-something page book that he wrote in a month's time. And in there, he proposed this very novel theory of psychology. And he submitted it to the American Psychiatric and American Psychological Associations with the idea that they were going to put their stamp of imprimatur on it and applaud this daring new approach to human psychology. Instead, they looked at it and absolute confusion, because there were no actual studies that these presumptions were based on, even though Hubbard was constantly alluding to such things. They thought of it as psychological folk art, and it was just a subject of ridicule, and he never forgave that. After that, psychiatry became the source of all evil in his mind. Going back to the beginning of the universe, racism, war, plague, everything you can name is caused by psychiatrists.
What's the difference between talk therapy you might find in psychiatry and what goes on in Scientology trying to lead someone to going clear?
Well, Scientology has its own form of therapy. It's called auditing. And the principal difference is that between you and your auditor, there is a machine that's called an e-meter. And it's like one-third of a lie detector. There are two metal cans that you hold. They used to be Campbell's soup cans with the label scraped off.
Yeah.
And wires leading to a meter. And a small current that's indetectable runs through them, and it actually measures your galvanic skin response. But imagine if you are sitting in a therapy session and there's a lie detector on you. It changes the relationship with your therapist. In addition, if you believe in the validity of the e-meter, this meter is saying whether you're lying or not, it can really have an extraordinary amount of power. If, for instance, you're beginning, if your therapist says, your auditor says, stop, what was that thought that just entered your head? It might be an image, and he would ask you to go back and look at that image. And it might be an explosion of a spaceship or something like that. And if you start to dwell on it and the e-meter is telling you this is a real memory, you might develop the memory of having exploded a planet in some time in the distant past, in a far-off civilization, or you might have been a child in the Civil War. But these constructions of past lives are given extraordinary amount of validity because the e-meter is constantly telling you this is true.
And, of course, all that consistent with the Scientology view that spirits are around forever.
Yes, that we're thetans is a term that they use for the soul, immortal spirits. And we've lived before, which is good news for people to think that, life is, we go from one life to another in infinitely. That's one of the great appeals of Scientology is that it demonstrates to you that, you are an immortal being and this lifetime is just one in a series.
Why so many celebrities engaged here and touted? Tom Cruise, John Travolta, Kirstie Alley, Beck and Elizabeth Moss from Mad Men and Greta Van Susteren. You go back, Isaac Hayes, Jenna Elfman, Juliet Lewis, Lisa Marie, Priscilla Presley, Chick Corea, yeah. Sonny Bono. Why is it so alluring in Hollywood?
Well, to start with, the religion was built for celebrities. It was established in Los Angeles for a purpose. Early on in the church's history, it started in 1954, a church publication listed the number of, you know, celebrities that they wanted to recruit into the church as exemplars. And they included Bob Hope, Walt Disney, Marlene Dietrich, Howard Hughes. I mean, some of the most notable people in the world.
Yeah. You know?
And they did draw in some of these people. Gloria Swanson, the famous silent movie star. Rock Hudson walked in the door. Elvis Presley bought some books. And, of course, his widow and daughter are still members. And the Celebrity Center was created in Hollywood to cater to celebrities. Young actors coming into town would, you know, to this day, there is such a thing called central casting. And Scientologists will be out in the queue when they're lining up to try to get parts as extras, you know, handing out brochures saying, come to the Celebrity Center, you'll learn how to get an agent, how to get ahead, and so on. Acting schools channel people into this organization.
Recruiting right there, channeled in right there. Lawrence Wright is with us. His big new book is Going Clear, Scientology, Hollywood, and the Prison of Belief. Lawrence Wright, please stand by. Beck, a follower, behind us right here with Everybody's Got to Learn Sometime. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Change your heart, it will astound you. I need your loving, not the sunshine. Everybody's gotta learn sometime. Everybody's gotta learn sometime. Everybody's gotta learn sometime.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative journalist Lawrence Wright about L. Ron Hubbard, big stars, big secrets, and the world of the Church of Scientology. He's out with a big new book, Going Clear, Scientology, Hollywood, and the Prison of Belief. Church of Scientology recently bought commercial time in the nation's biggest advertising event, the Super Bowl. A one-minute spot called Knowledge ran in select cities, New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Dallas. The ad was produced by the church's own production company. Some reports say the church may have paid as much as $8 million to run the spot during the game. Here's part of that ad.
To the curious, the inquisitive, the seekers of knowledge, to the ones who just want to know about life, about the universe, about yourself. Not cute questions, big questions, ones that matter. To the rebels, the artists, the free thinkers, and the innovators who care less about labels and more about truth, who believe nonconformity is more than a bumper sticker, that knowledge is more than words on a page. You're young, you're old, you're powerful beyond measure, and the fuel of that power is not magic or mysticism, but knowledge.
It's knowledge from the Church of Scientology ad during the Super Bowl there. Lawrence Wright, they're reaching out there to the rebels, the artists, the free thinkers, the innovators, promising power beyond measure. What's the pitch?
Well, Scientology does promise superhuman powers as you're, you know, going up the ladder of spiritual attainment. It's called operating thetans. Once you get to the level of clear and you begin to go climb up on that ladder, which is a very expensive ladder to climb.
$300,000, you say, people can expect to pay today to get to enlightenment.
And that's just, you know, to take the coursework. You'll also be pressured to contribute to the building fund and join the International Association of Scientologists and purchase all the books of L. Ron Hubbard and the e-meters and so on. People can drop, you know, $1 million on this trail and frequently do. But, you know, the truth is there aren't any superpowers. We're humans. we're stuck in this with who we really are, and so the promises of being able to control the universe or be invulnerable to disease, and those are not powers that we're going to be granted, no matter how much we spend for them.
Though we know that certain dogmas or paths or beliefs, whatever you want to call it, can pump people up. And, you know, I mean, belief is half the battle sometimes, right? There used to be a positive mental attitude. Who was the millionaire who used to promote that all over the country? Have you seen an element where people actually do, I don't know, find strength in this?
Absolutely, Tom. I think that's true of, you know, many religious communities. And I think, you know, I don't have any quarrel with the beliefs of Scientology. I feel like people can believe whatever they want. In fact, esoteric beliefs form a barrier that, you know, people have to step over. You know, you can think of so many religions, perhaps all religions, they have a barrier of irrationality. And if you step across that and you move into a community of people that believe or say they believe like you, and there's nothing separating that community from the rest of the world except for the beliefs. That's not a matter of race or gender or language. Mm-hmm. It's belief. And the draw, you know, the power that one can experience inside a religious community can be very profound for good or ill.
But then there's the dark side as well. Let's go to our listeners, Fred in Buffalo, New York. Fred, you're on the air with Lawrence Wright. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Good talking to you again.
You too.
I was actually on the staff in the employment of the Church of Scientology in Dallas. I think it was in 1998. I became very interested in the church while I was in college, and eventually decided that I really wanted to check it out on a personal way. And as our guest has already noted, it's very expensive to take the services. And so I joined the staff instead, and you know, they're nice. They're very nice people. Some of them are quite intelligent, and they're very passionate about wanting to make a better world. And many times it was a pleasant experience in lots of ways. To this day, I still think that there is something to the therapy, you know, going back in your past and finding these things that were painful for you and discovering if those things, if these memories, which they call engrams, if those might actually hurt people. And I think that that deserves investigation. But the problem is that Ellen Hubbard claimed to have really found all of the answers. And the people there believe that religiously. You know, Scientologists religiously believe that L. Ron Hubbard found all the answers, so there's no reason to do any more research. You know, all the answers have already been found, and so it's not real science. Mm-hmm. It's all the argument from authority. And if somebody wanted to investigate past life experiences, or what they would call whole track experiences, I think, you know, that's worth looking into. You know, people want to know about that. You know, everybody wants to know about that.
But maybe too much L. Ron Hubbard, ultimately, for your taste, Fred? I mean, he is absolutely at the top of the thinking inside Scientology. I appreciate your call, Fred. I got a little tape here as well from Tom Cruise. This was at a Scientology meeting in 2009. He was talking about L. Ron Hubbard's theories, how it helped him in his own life. Here's Tom Cruise.
This world needs help, the kind of help where people can help themselves. Now, I have and will continue to dedicate my life to accomplishing this. And I am supremely grateful to Mr. L. Ron Hubbard for the study technology he provided, because I would not be here today if I didn't get that.
Tom Cruise in 2009. Tom Cruise, who, Lawrence Wright, you quote in your book, describing himself as just a step or two behind L. Ron Hubbard in that ascent to, I don't know, stature or insight, you name it. Remind us of who L. Ron Hubbard was and how he went from becoming a pulp fiction writer to somebody who had the kind of audacity to start a religion, Lawrence.
He's one of the greatest characters I ever had the opportunity to write about. I was completely amazed by him, because you have two narratives that describe his life. From the Church of Scientology, he's the greatest man who ever lived. And, you know, many people look at him and say he's a fraud and a con man. I don't think either is entirely true. And let me take the con man thing to start with. If it was true that L. Ron Hubbard was a complete fraud and he only started the Church of Scientology for money, at some point he would have taken the money and run. He never did that. He spent his entire life elaborating this esoteric philosophy and the bureaucracy that goes along with it. All of those books that he wrote on top of his pulp fiction output, he attained the Guinness Book of World Records for the number of titles published, more than 1,000. So, you know, my hat is off to him in terms of his work ethic. There has never been anyone who poured himself with more dedication into it. And I don't think that he would have done that if he didn't deeply believe that there was truth in it.
Well, but how can you be sure of the money? He was very upfront about the money, saying money is part of it.
He liked money.
And he continued to get money, as you describe in the book, you know, all the way through, even when he had to offer up movie treatments that they would pay him $100,000 for every movie treatment. He would churn them out. So the millions kept coming to him very late in his life.
Yeah, and yet he was living, at the end of his life, he was living in a bus. You know, he didn't spend a lot of money. He had, you know, he had the appurtenances of money at many times. You know, I mean, he had a big house that he lived in briefly, but he would spend a lot of his life on the run. His tastes were, you know, he had high tone taste, but the truth is, you know, he spent a good deal of life living very modestly. So, you know, I find him. You know, my theory about him, and, you know, the question people also bring up is that he was crazy. And, you know, there's no question that at times in his life he felt that he was mentally unsettled. And I've been offered many different diagnoses by authorities on, you know, what was wrong with him. But I think that he began writing Dianetics as a form of self-healing. The narrative he has about himself was that he was, after the war, left, you know, blinded and crippled, and medicine couldn't help, so he invented Dianetics to cure
himself. Kind of a PTSD condition, but was there evidence of experience in the war that would justify that claim?
No. He was never injured in the war. His medical records show that he had conjunctivitis and ulcers. These were not war wounds.
Yeah.
And yet he has the kind of shamanistic journey of, you know, if, you know, psychiatrists or anthropologists sometimes refer to schizophrenia as a shaman disease, because in Aboriginal cultures you'll find that people we classify as insane sometimes become the healers in those communities. And if you take a generous view of L. Ron Hubbard's life and trajectory, I think you could describe him as a kind of shaman.
Let's go to Don in Providence, Rhode Island. Don, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. I just made it like an observation. I grew up in Clearwater, Florida, where the Church of Scientology is a huge face there. And just growing up there as a kid, walking around downtown, the church is evident. It's there. It's in your face. But there's this cloak about it. There's a, you know, and it's woven with belief, you know, and they are almost hostile in a sense when you go down there, especially if you have an opinion about their religion or anything to say against it, or maybe not against it. And I've even seen, you know, families of church members of the Church of Scientology go out and protest in masks, you know, asking for their families back.
Wearing masks. Why? Because it's intimidating? It's scary, Don? What?
Yes, exactly. It's intimidating. You know, for their families, because the members that have become, you know, members of this church, you know, they obviously want their whole families as well, you know, and anyone who wants to resist that, I think they see as almost a threat, especially down there. They have a lot to protect.
There's the report out of Clearwater, Florida. Don, I appreciate your call very much. Thank you for bringing that to us. Lawrence, what about that? What would the threat to family be? What would the threat to You know, here's our caller saying in Clearwater, Florida, where there's such a big Scientology center, he's seen people protesting in masks, pleading for their families back.
There have been a lot of tears in this story from family members who have been had members of their family turn against them, been forced to, as in the church's term, disconnect from them. If you are in Scientology and you change your mind, leave the church, and maybe speak out against it, the church will declare you a suppressive person. And that means that no Scientologist can have anything to do with you, no matter if it's your mother or your husband or whoever. And it's a real problem, especially for people who have been in the Sea Org, the clergy. And oftentimes, you know, I'm asked, you know, why don't they just leave?
Mm-hmm.
And one reason is that oftentimes their entire families are inside the church. And they would be walking away from a community of everybody they know. It's a terrible sacrifice.
But inside the church, you describe dungeons and degradation. Yeah. Like what and why?
Well, I had 12 people tell me they'd been beaten by the leader of the church, David Miscavige, and more than 20 witnesses to that kind of behavior. There are re-education camps in different places called the Rehabilitation Project Force. And in particular, there's one on this compound, this 500-acre compound in the desert of Southern California, where the Sea Org has its international headquarters. And there are two house trailers that are married together that were an office suite that had been made into something called the Hole. And in 2004, David Miscavige began confining at the top level of his executive strata in more than 100 people at one point in the Hole. And they were made to sleep in sleeping bags, no furniture, ant infested. Many people reported physical abuse. One person reported having been beaten by Miscavige and then made to mop the restroom floor with his tongue. You know, that kind of degradation capped, I think, the most interesting episode was when the leader came in with a jam box and made them play musical chairs, brought in a bunch of chairs, saying that, only the last person standing would be able to stay in the Sea Org. Everybody else would be separated from their spouses and sent off to far-flung places. And fights broke out, clothes were torn, chairs were broken in half. And what's so striking about that is they were fighting to stay in that hole, in that confinement. And that's why the subtitle of the book is The Prison of Belief.
It's incredible, fighting to stay even then, because they had adopted the view that this was the path to enlightenment, or because they just didn't want to be cut off from their spouses, kids.
Well, those two things are very powerful. In addition, you know, many people who are in the Sea Org have been removed from mainstream society, and they don't have a very strong sense of the outside world. They're taught to be very suspicious of it, and they fear they're going to lose all the Scientology has given them. So they're very reluctant to make that break.
We're talking with Lawrence Wright. His new book is Going Clear: Scientology, Hollywood, and the Prison of Belief. Lisa Marie Presley, involved with Scientology, but singing here in a way that sounds kind of critical. Take a listen. You Ain't Seen Nothing Yet is her song. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
I don't respond. I've lost the plot. Unethical. Not a word I thought. You can think that I'm evil and I'm awful. You ain't seen nothing yet. I'm a bit
Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative journalist Lawrence Wright about L. Ron Hubbard, Big Stars, Big Secrets, and the World of Scientology. His new book is Going Clear, Scientology, Hollywood, and the Prison of Belief, the Church of Scientology, buying ad time in the Super Bowl in a number of cities around the country, looking for rebels and, you know, those looking for their own path. Here's a little more from that that ad that ran in a number of cities around the country.
Sure, some will doubt you. Let them. Dare to think for yourself, to look for yourself, to make up your own mind. Because in the eternal debate for answers, the one thing that's true is what's true for you.
Pretty slick. In between Coca-Cola and Budweiser ads, there's the Church of Scientology. Lawrence, lots of response online. It's interesting here. You know, Dave says, you know, do Scientologists really believe that some alien named Xenu threw other aliens into volcanoes? Sounds nuts. I think that is part of the story, as I read in your book.
That's correct.
Christopher says, sounds like Mormonism may help people, but to believe such outlandish stories created so recently in history, how do people do it, he writes. That. But Jess writes also on Twitter here, Lawrence, you know, the difference between Scientology and other religions is temporal proximity to the present. I mean, sort of look at others, you know, go back. They're older, but are they weirder? But then you've got real skepticism. Trudy says, cult, blackmailing, murderers, child abusers, worse than the mafia. Well, I don't know how much of that stands up, but there is real animosity out there among people who feel affronted by this organization, and even affronted by the idea that it has thrived under our constitutional freedom of religion, Lawrence.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the reason that it's protected by the Constitution is that in 1993, the IRS determined that Scientology was a religious community. And the IRS is an organization that is very poorly equipped to make distinctions like that, but it's the only opinion that really matters. It came at a time when the church had decided for some years not to pay its taxes. And by 1993, it owed $1 billion in back taxes. It did not have $1 billion, and it was facing extinction. And it was David Miscavige, the current leader, who really saved Scientology. But the manner in which he did that was to launch more than 2,300 lawsuits against the IRS and individual agents, to hire private investigators, to follow agents, to go to conventions to see who was drinking too much, who was fooling around on the road. And, you know, all of these things were I don't know the merit of the decision that the IRS made their determination that Scientology qualified as a religion.
But he went after them in a very
he went after
personal
them.
Way.
And really brought that that agency to its knees. And all those suits and the private investigators as a part of the deal, that was dropped. So then the vast protection of religious guarantees of the First Amendment encompassed the Church of Scientology and all of its practices.
And so they had the cover, and on they went. Kathleen's calling from Lexington, Massachusetts. Kathleen, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks, Tom. Mm-hmm. Well, I just read Going Clear during our past snowy weekend.
Yeah.
And I think Lawrence is really brave for taking on Scientology, because this organization isn't shy about going after people they perceive as threats. You know, people like Paulette Cooper in the 1970s, or
they
Joan
said,
Wood.
If I recall correctly, they said they wanted something like insane or in jail.
Right.
After she wrote about them, mm-hmm.
and she was neither insane nor a criminal, mm-hmm. or even you know, more recently Joan Wood in the 90s, who was the coroner in the Lisa McPherson case. And I'm just wondering, are you concerned about being the victim of similar harassment,
Lawrence Wright?
Well, I certainly went into this with my eyes open. I knew about the prehistory of the church, and I knew that they would probably react strongly. And that's one of the reasons I took such extraordinary care in writing the book. When I wrote an article that prefigured this book about Paul Haggis in The New Yorker, we had, you know, eventually 5 fact-checkers on the case, and sent the church more than 1,000 fact-checking queries. When I started writing the book, I hired 2 fact-checkers on my own, and continually sent questions to the church, which was very laggardly in responding. But I don't Kathleen, you know, for one thing, my last book was about Al-Qaeda. And Scientology is not a terrorist organization. They do have a lot of lawyers. And, you know, we've gotten innumerable stern letters from lawyers. And I just returned from England where Scientology was able to a legal letter came to my publisher there, and they decided to not publish the book. So I'm trying to get in the UK they have different libel laws, and so we're working hard to change those libel laws.
Makes me glad to have the freedom of expression we have in this country.
It's the same First Amendment, Tom, that allows the church this broad reach of freedom in their actions. It also gives me the freedom to write about them.
So you may be accurate with all your fact checkers, but accuracy is not necessarily a shield against being harassed.
Yeah.
What about it?
I'm not harassed. The church did publish one surveillance photo of me talking to one of my sources, but I'm sure that they were following the source and not me. They have written after the New Yorker article came out. The church has a magazine they call Freedom, and they put a comic picture of me on the cover and lay it into me and my character and the magazine, and even attacked my fact checkers. And now they've hired a private investigator who is a former journalist to write another article about me, but. That's all stuff that I expected would come along for this particular project.
Well, we're glad for your courage to do the work. Ryan in Burlington, Vermont. Ryan, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I guess I have a question about the sheer believability of the religion. I understand that, religions in their infancy all kind of come from somewhere and you have to start believing at a time, but right now in our day and age, when you listen to people talk about it, it just sounds like science fiction, to be honest.
What about it, Lawrence? It sounds like science fiction. I mean, it does seem that roll of butcher's paper that L. Ron Hubbard wrote his Pulp Fiction on, almost as though it just kept rolling right into creating a religion, and it can sound that way. I'm sure Ryan's not alone in scratching his head and saying, how can people buy that?
Well, the Scientology beliefs are very esoteric. Bear in mind that until the mid-80s, nobody knew what Scientology believed because it was so closely held, and you had to pay dearly to acquire those inner doctrines of the church.
Is that up front even now when you first go in? Are they talking about different distant planets and people dropped into volcanoes and nuclear explosions down there and all that?
That information is revealed in what's called OT3. It's the third level of the operating thetan, the pyramid you climb to get to the top of their spiritual attainment. And that was a big secret. And now, of course, it's ridiculed on South Park and it's all over the internet. And I think the church has never really recovered from the fact that their suitcase of beliefs was dumped into a public courtroom and then into the newspapers. It's I think the membership began to take a nosedive when people realized what was really the belief system in there. But on the other hand, I'll reiterate, exotic beliefs do form a function of creating a community. And Mormonism, as someone mentioned earlier, it was the most stigmatized religion in the 19th century, probably the most persecuted sect in our country's history. It has very unusual beliefs, and yet today, we in this last presidential campaign, we had two men, Mormons, actively running for president. So you never know how things might change.
You write about how they got close to John Travolta just when his career was taking off, Welcome Back, Cotter, and all that way back in the day, and really gave him a lot of support, but also may have taken auditing testimony from him that he could fear later if it was exposed, giving them maybe some power, you write. Tom Cruise is interesting because he seems to be, at least he describes himself as very, very high up in the organization. You quote him saying to somebody, "You don't get it. It goes like this," and he's raising his hand over his head. He says, first there's LRH, L. Ron Hubbard. Then he moves his hand down a few inches. Then there's COB, that's the chairman of the board, Miscavige, the current head. Then he brings his head down to his own eye level and says, then there's me. Is he number three in the Church of Scientology, or is it something else he's describing?
No, what he means is that in terms of his importance to the church, and I think I would honestly say that, you know, he's right about that. And it may even be that he's more important in some ways than David Miscavige, because few people know who David Miscavige is.
The current
Everybody
head,
knows
chairman
who.
Of the board, yeah.
Right. Everyone knows Tom Cruise, and most people know about Scientology because of Tom Cruise. And that's why I think that he's got a moral responsibility to look into the activities that are taking place inside the church at its highest and most secret levels. This is the product he's selling. I'm not condemning Tom Cruise as a person. I'm not saying that he's, you know, wicked in any way, and I'm not saying he didn't get anything out of Scientology. I think that he did. He obviously credits it for helping him with his dyslexia, and he's clearly a fervent believer. Mm. But he's selling it to the whole world, and if he's going to be doing that, I can't think of any other way in which Scientology can be reformed except through the pressure of high-profile individuals such as, and mainly, Tom Cruise.
Let's go to Laura in Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Laura. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I had some experience working inside the Scientology buildings. I was with an outside service company and saw some really crazy things that went on inside their buildings and their living quarters.
Are you talking in Hollywood or Clearwater? Where?
In Hollywood.
Yeah.
The
like
Hollywood
what?
Building. The building was huge.
Looks like a castle.
Walking down the halls, it looked like a ship inside. They had it all painted light blue, and it was very ship-like. And all the living quarters were like jail cells. They had iron cots stuck to the walls with no building, no windows. And the people inside there, they'd have these black bands on their arms, and they had to run everywhere they went. And I was told that they had done something wrong, and that's why they were working it off. You know, they would just have to run everywhere. And this other guy, lots of crazy experiences that come to my mind right now.
Mm-hmm.
This other guy that worked in the boiler room, he was an old man, and he sat down there naked all day long. That was his job, just to tend to the furnace room of the empire there.
Did it make you want to join up, Laura? Did it make you want to dive in?
I want to jump right in there. And I overheard him saying one day that somebody, there was a person that I had not dealt with the year before, and they were gone this year, and they said that he had committed a voluntary end of cycle, which translates to be suicide.
Right.
They had their own terms for everything. It was just really crazy society, just removed from the world. I mean, none of it's sensible. These people had just indentured their lives to it.
Well, Laura, I appreciate your call very much from Nashville. Thank you for that. Lawrence Wright, does that add up to you? Does that sound like what you know?
Let me explain what she saw a little bit. First of all, the Sea Org comes from the term Sea Organization when in the mid-60s when L. Ron Hubbard was on the run from indictments and process servers and so on. He created a little Scientology Navy, and they sailed through the Mediterranean and the Caribbean, and mainly young people, and they were called the Sea Org. And that's why, you know, that today they wear kind of naval outfits, and then those people with the black armbands are in the RPF, which is the Rehabilitation Project Force, and they've committed some infraction, and they'll have to work it off. And you frequently see, you know, sometimes they are, you know, put into manual labor for many hours a day. Other forms of punishment just include confinement, sometimes for years on end, and such as the president. It's a nominal post, but Heber Jinch was put in the hole that I referenced earlier for 7 years.
Is that legal, confinement for years on end? I mean, this is – who are they to confine somebody?
Well, here's, you know, it's a good question, Tom. I ran across an FBI investigation when I was working on this, and you know, they were looking into it from a human trafficking point of view, and they had the idea that they were going to break into this compound in Southern California, opened the gates, opened the doors of this double-wide trailer, the hole, and liberate all these executives who had been stuck in there for months and years at a time. And their sources, same people I was talking to, former Scientology executives, said if you do that, they would just say, it's all sunshine and seashells. We're here for our own good. More example that it's not – they're not necessarily being held against their will. It's their will that is holding them.
That's your prison of belief. Executives in there sort of as the outcome of almost internecine warfare within the church. And there have been some pretty tough battles there. Where do you finally come down, Lawrence Wright? I mean, is this something that we should embrace and extend the privileges of religious faith and tax exemption and everything to, and even – look the other way when someone's sitting in a cell in their own prison of belief, or not?
My feeling is that, you know, I don't argue with people's religious beliefs, but actual practices and behaviors that are degrading, humiliating, and especially where children are concerned. And many people have been impressed into the Sea Org at alarmingly young ages, and they sacrifice their education, their future, and they're impoverished by their service. I think those kinds of things have to be examined. I think the Church of Scientology is headed for a reckoning. And there should be an accounting, as there have been in other churches.
Do you think it'll be around for the long term, or do you see a flash in the pan?
It's got $1 billion in cash reserves and a lot of lawyers, so I predict that it can hold on for the meantime.
Lawrence Wright, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. His big book is Going Clear, Scientology, Hollywood, and the Prison of Belief. Lawrence Wright, great talking with you today. Thank you so much for your work, and thanks for joining us.
It's been a pleasure, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Listeners, thanks for all of your insights. You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.